What's up, everyone? I'm Nick.
I'm Em.
And welcome into the Ominous Archives. All right, Em. Back for another week. We were a little broken up last week when we tried to record.
Yeah.
So we had the big storm. It was the candlelight.
Mm-hmm.
So this was supposed to be another candlelight episode.
Yes.
Because the last time we tried recording this, there was a storm, and we got Em's episode done.
Mm-hmm.
And then the storm rudely interrupted us, and what happened was my power came back on.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, well, why is only half the basement work?
So Nick almost burnt the house down to make it. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I mean, we flipped the breaker and here a power strip decided to short circuit and there was a small fire in the archives.
There was literal fire in Nick's hands. Yeah, it was actually probably one of the craziest things I've ever seen with my two eyes, but
we're good though. Everything's fine.
Everything's fine.
Everybody's okay.
There's the archives no damage. Are good.
Archives are fine. All intact.
We're back.
So that leads us to tonight.
What do we have?
We're going to be unlocking the door on a modern urban legend that's as unsettling as it is mysterious. We're going to be talking about the Black-Eyed Kids, or Bex. I think I'm going to refer to them as Bex from here on out.
Okay.
Because I'll probably get tongue-tied trying to say Black-Eyed Kids all the time.
Yeah. Okay, got it. The Bex.
So we're going to figure out who they are, what do they want, and why do so many people claim to have seen them? So grab your flashlight, maybe lock your door if you haven't already, because once you learn about them, they tend to stick in your mind, and apparently, they tend to show up after you talk about them.
Great, perfect, so maybe not.
Yeah.
No.
Just don't let them in and don't answer the door.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you can answer the door, just don't let them in.
Okay.
So, we're going to go back to 1996. What a year that was, because I was five.
I was not here.
Yeah, you were not here yet.
I was not here.
So anyway, we're going to head to the quiet town of Abilene, Texas.
Okay, in Texas.
There weren't viral videos. It was before Reddit threads, before TikTok. And we had this single account that would go on to haunt the internet for decades. It was late at night, and Brian Bethel, who was a seasoned journalist for the Abilene Reporter News, had just wrapped up his shift at the paper. He pulled into a dimly lit strip mall parking lot, which was just outside his cable company's office. Like many had to do back in the day, he was sitting in his car to write a check to pay his internet bill. Em, you probably have no idea what that is. Yeah, back when you had to use checks for everything?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think pay something on your phone.
I'm pretty sure. Like, my generation is when that stuff, like, phased out. We stopped doing that. You still can, but
I was going to say, try telling Mom that you can't do any. Mom doesn't do anything online. She's an old school girly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Give her QVC.
Uh-huh.
That's when it all happened. So he describes the moment as a sudden primal awareness. The hair on the back of his neck stood up. Then an uncanny feeling of being watched. He glanced up, and there's two young boys, roughly 10 to about 14 years old, standing just outside his driver's side window. At first glance, they look normal. Kind of. They're wearing hoodies, standing still and strangely close, and then one of them spoke very calmly. He said that he needed a ride home because they wanted to see a movie and they forgot their money. Now, they said they wanted to see Mortal Kombat, and Brian just so happened to kind of, like, glance back towards the theater, because he was actually using, like, the theater's sign to write his check, and saw that Mortal Kombat started about 45 minutes earlier.
Mm.
So it didn't make sense. There was no way they were going to be able to see that. Because by the time he, even if he did,
right,
by the time he'd get them there and get them back, that the movie would probably be over. And then at that point, something else stood out to him. Their voices didn't match their appearance. They sounded older than they looked. Their speech was kind of off. It was too articulate, too confident. It was kind of like adults pretending to be kids.
Mm.
But still, you know, Brian tried to, you know, stay polite. And he told them it was too late for that movie, and he asked where they lived. And at that point, their tone shifted. And they said, "Just let us in. We won't take long," the first boy insisted. And at this point, the words were kind of demanding, more authoritative, and it was kind of like they a request, but they were commanding him to let him in.
Right.
And as the unease built in Brian's chest, he found the courage to finally meet their gaze, and that's when he saw their eyes. No whites, no irises, no pupils, just black. A void where a soul should be. Brian felt paralyzed in the moment. And then the instinct kicked in. He throws the car in reverse and speeds off into the night. And at that point, as he's like, you know, reversing, like getting the hell out of there, he checks the rearview mirror and they're gone. Just vanished.
Of course.
And it's one of those things where there's no way they could have moved fast enough to hide behind anything.
Right.
So they were just gone. So back at his apartment, shaken and short of breath, he locked every door and window. Still trembling, he sat down at his desk, hands hovering over his keyboard. He needed to write it down to make sense of what just happened. So as he typed, the question swirled in his mind. What were they? Why did their presence flood him with such an unexplained fear? And perhaps the most disturbing of all, what would have happened if he let them in? Brian never found those answers, but an email he sent to a group of his friends describing the event was leaked and put on the internet. First in a message board post, and then later in an article in the Abilene Reporter News. His story ignited the urban legend of the mysterious beings we now call black-eyed kids. His words fired a chilling spark that spread through paranormal forums, late-night radio shows, and digital campfires all over the world. The encounter may have been isolated, but the legend was just the beginning. It's crazy to, like, when you, obviously the research, like, we've done, and I've done, and Sam's done for this episode, hearing that story and, like, reading it is just wild.
Yeah.
Because you think in 96, it's not like, it's not like he was trying to be viral. It's not like he was trying to do anything.
Right.
He's just trying to pay his internet bill.
Right. Because, like, what are you gaining out of that then?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Like, at this point, you're not gaining anything by him saying, "Oh, I ran into these," like, blah, 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 and, like, making it up.
Right.
An investigative journalist who interviewed Brian around 2015, Brian says, "My sleep was greatly disturbed. I didn't want to sleep at all, actually. I felt unsafe doing so. I kept having this fantasy of them appearing at the foot of my bed or waiting outside my door for me when I went outside. It was a rough few weeks, I'll say, and the effects linger to this day. The use of black eyes to symbolize evil has become a common trope in horror films and other media. And I will tell you that every time I see such an image, especially if I'm not expecting it, I flash back briefly to those terrible, agonizing moments in my car. I legitimately did not know if I was going to die or not. I've never been so terrified." Then Brian was asked his thoughts about this controversy and just exactly how he felt possibly creating an accidental urban legend. He says, "It's easy now to write something quasi-convincing based on the model of kids knocking on a car window, asking to come in, the door opener detects something wrong, terrible revelation, rinse and repeat. I judge each story shared with me on its own merits. But I apply greater skepticism to anything that adheres too savagely to the basic formula. I look and listen for little variations and details that add more verisimilitude. If it's just a carbon copy of what I've heard or seen, I tend to dismiss it, or at least give it less credence. That said, I haven't heard many, many stories that I'm convinced are true." Scholars and urban legend researchers often point to Brian's story as the modern birth of the Black Eyed Kids myth. While details vary from one encounter to the next, one theory remains persistent. These beings are death personified as children.
Great.
They weaponize our instincts, our trust and innocence, our empathy for the helpless, and turn them against us. Once invited in, the theory goes, they don't simply cause harm. They bring ruin, death, and illness.
That really is the thing, because like I feel like the most innocent person in the world is a child. Like, like that's obvious. Animals and children.
Yep.
Like, so it's so spooky. Super spooky. Spooky.
Thank God we don't do a podcast that covers spooky things.
Gosh, could you imagine?
Yeah. I don't know. Oh, geez. Sorry. I just got in a pillow fight with my mic. Why don't we dive deeper into what makes Black Eyed Kids so uniquely disturbing?
Please tell me some info. I'd love to hear it.
So while encounters vary, the details repeat with uncanny precision, as though pulled from the same dark script. They always appear to be children or teens, anywhere from a kindergartner to about high schooler. And that's the innocence, the expectation of vulnerability that becomes the trap.
Right, because like, you want to help a kid. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to help a helpless kid. Yeah.
Sometimes their clothing is outdated, like something from a thrift store or a faded decade. In one chilling case, they wore what appeared to be new sports gear, but with the logo from a team that had folded 10 years earlier. They were dressing based on old information and trying to blend in, but missing the mark just slightly.
Yeah.
They tend to appear in limited spaces, like doorsteps, dark roads, strip mall parking lots, even remote cabins. Their speech patterns are almost robotic, too monotone and too formal. They sometimes speak in a voice far more mature than their faces would suggest. Many victims say that they repeat the same phrase over and over like a broken record. At first, the children plead, asking to use the bathroom, make a call, catch a ride. But as you stall or resist, their demeanor changes. They become more aggressive, more demanding, more inhuman. And there's one moment that it turns the encounter from unsettling to unforgettable. The eyes. Jason Affault, a journalist and author who spent over a decade researching these encounters, describes their eyes as being like rat's eyes. Shiny, flat, and empty. There's no pupil, there's no white, there's no iris. It's just totally black.
I hate that.
The moment the victim locks eyes with the children, a wave of instinctual terror hits, what some describe as a physical jolt, like their body knows before their brain.
That's
something
crazy.
Is very, very wrong.
Like, you know, immediately, like your body just reacts.
I totally feel that. And we'll get into it in a little later too, but like animals pick up on it like right away.
Yeah. Animals are I was just going to say, when that whole thing happened with the fire thing, Kobe was acting so weird. Kobe knew before I did because Nick wasn't in the room. He was messing with the breaker. Dogs and animals are just so smart.
Kobe knew super early on that we were pregnant.
They just know, dude.
He never cuddles.
Yeah.
Never cuddles. And Frankie was laying in bed the one night, and he just laid on her stomach. And it was like 2.5 hours. He just laid there.
Yep.
It's crazy. They just... Their instincts are just wild.
Right.
So it's like your body gets that physical jolt, and your body kind of knows before your brain that something's way off. And then comes the unnerving part of it all. They can't come in unless you allow them to, or in other words, you invite them in.
Very vampire-esque.
Very vampire-esque. This is where the folklore really deepens. Bridget Burke, an adjunct professor of religion at the Montclair State University, points out that this detail is crucial. It ties directly into ancient stories of vampires, demons, and fae, supernatural beings that need consent to enter a human space. The invitation, whether spoken aloud or implied, is a threshold. So you don't even have to say come in.
Hmm.
If you just imply it, open the door a little bit further.
Yeah.
Kind of step back some. They're coming in. It's a symbolic act, and once it's given, the consequences vary, but rarely end well.
Because, of course.
There are dozens of stories of people who've claimed they did let in the children. And what followed? Fatal car accidents within days. Sudden diagnoses of terminal cancer.
Oh.
Pets that just vanish. Lives that completely fall apart.
No.
Burke warns that the uncanny nature of the children is what unnerves us so deeply. They're almost what we expect a child to look like. They're liminal in the sense that they're children, but not quite, she says. In myth, children are supposed to represent a new beginning, a new birth. That's not what these are. They're not just wrong. They're calculated. Jason Offit believes this is by design. I think this is what they choose to look like. They use what we trust the most, children, and twist it into a mask. Something to get past our defenses. I kind of feel like, I mean, I guess like little kids, I would just trust.
Yeah.
Teenagers, no way. No way. Come knock on my door, you're not coming in. I don't care.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Sucks to be you.
Yeah, it's different when we're talking, like, children, like, that, because the innocence of a child is, like, there's a difference of, like,
yeah,
child innocence and, like, teenager innocence, like,
yeah, I mean,
I know what you mean.
There's a reason why there's a song written by My Chemical Romance.
They do scare the living shit out of me.
Yep. But it works. And
right, it's smart, honestly. Yep. Like, it really is.
These demons are smart.
Yeah.
It's because deep down we're wired to help children, to protect them. And these beings exploit the empathy and they weaponize it.
Dang exploiters.
So of all the old world legends that mirror the black-eyed kids, Irish changelings may be the closest and the creepiest.
What the heck is an Irish changeling?
Changelings are wild.
That's interesting. I'm Irish.
I'm all Irish.
I'm Irish. Give me the tea.
That wasn't even a good accent by me.
I don't have a single good accent I can give you, so I'm not even going to try.
Nah. So in Celtic folklore, the Fae, or Fair Folk, were powerful, otherworldly beings. One of their darkest habits was stealing human babies from their cradles and replacing them with a changeling.
Fun.
That sounds super fun. Not really, but
sure. Steal my baby. Like, what the hell?
Eh. At first, the changeling looked normal, but soon the parents would notice something wasn't right. The child was too quiet or too loud, spoke too early, or knew too much. And their eyes were wrong. They were cold. Legends warned that if you suspected a changeling, you could drive it out with fire or iron. I don't know why. Fire or ironing. If you just iron something, just iron your shirt.
That'll work.
That'll get changelings out. In the worst stories, desperate families took drastic measures, believing that they were protecting their real child. The parallels to black-eyed kids are hard to miss. Both appear innocent, but aren't. Both ask to come in, and both leave a trail of dread in their wake. The changeling tale is a warning passed down for centuries. Not every child is what they seem. So let's walk through some of the most unsettling reports of encounters with Bex that don't just share common traits, but leave behind a trail of fear, misfortune, and mystery. So, this is we're going to call it, what am I going to call this? The Vermont Cabin Couple. So, a married couple, seeking peace in the snowy wilderness of Vermont, rented a remote cabin for for a quieter winter escape. But one night, they were startled awake by a loud knock at the front door. Archie's eyes were like, I don't even know if you just could hear that. I just knocked on my tray. Two children stood outside in the cold and asked politely to use their phone. Despite an overwhelming sense of unease, the couple allowed them in. Bang. The power went out instantly.
Hmm.
The dog began growling and then bolted to hide under the bed. The children sat silently on the couch, not moving, not blinking, just watching. Minutes ticked by, and then as if on cue, they stood up and said, "Our parents are here." They walked into the snow, without coats, where there were two tall, shadowy figures waiting for them at the tree line. They vanished into the night. In the weeks that followed, the man developed an aggressive form of skin cancer. His wife began suffering from severe migraines and unexpected nosebleeds. Medical science had no answers, but they were sure of one thing. The night everything changed was the night they let those children in.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. This next story is The Marine's Encounter. It's from Reddit. This story comes from a U.S. Marine stationed in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. It was a quiet weekend in November of 2009. Oh, what a year. I feel like anytime there's a year where I can say, oh, what a year, I just say
I was alive for that one.
Yeah? I don't think I remember what happened in 2009. I have to think really hard. I mean, it's around my birthday, but...
There you go.
Anyway. And he was just one of the few Marines who'd stayed behind in the barracks. No money, no plans, just a movie and a night in. Then came a knock at the door. Expecting his roommate, he opened it without much thought. But instead of a drunken friend, he found two children standing there alone on the third floor walkway. Immediately, something felt off. These weren't typical kids. Their eyes were pitch black. They said they were cold and they wanted to come in and read. The Marine hesitated. It wasn't just what they said, it was how they said it. Calm and flat. And who, he thought, asked to read at midnight on a Marine base? He glanced around. The walkway was empty. And when he looked back, the kids had taken a step closer. Every instinct told him something was wrong. So he shut the door and locked it. For the next 5 minutes, there was a soft, steady knock. Then, the sound of his window rattling. And then, silence. The next morning, he reported the incident to the officer on duty, but was told that there were no kids unaccounted for and no reports of anything unusual. To this day, he doesn't know who or what those kids were, but one thing stuck with him. The fear wasn't like anything he felt in combat. It was something else, a kind of fear that didn't make any sense, but he knew he had to listen to it.
That's wild. Because kids were unaccounted for. I don't know what you're on about.
Everybody's cool. Everybody's here.
Okay.
So now, we're actually going to go back further than 96. Because this is going to be the black-eyed beings of Anise in France.
Hmm.
So long before the internet, two men, Patrick and Alan, were driving through a village in Assin, France. In the soft afternoon light, They saw five small figures near the last house in the village. They had long hair that fell down their backs to their waists, their noses. Yeah.
I would thought you were talking about me. I was going to say, I'm shaking my head because I'm thinking of The Grudge. You say long hair past their waist, and my first thought is The Grudge, and I hate that. I was already thinking it.
Oh, yeah. This description definitely gets grub drives. Their noses were compressed inwards, and their mouths were always shut. One of the beings approached the car. It was just over 4 feet tall, dressed in a long spotted robe, with earthy yellow skin and a billiard ball size black eye. Ahlin terrified, screamed for Patrick to drive. When they returned with the locals, the beings were gone. One resident claimed that he'd seen them too, but thought they were children in yellow raincoats. The strange blend of alien-like appearance and childlike behavior would echo in dozens of future reports worldwide related to Bex. Now in the 1950s, the screaming boy at the fence. In a rural town, a teenage boy named Harold was walking home when he spotted a child leaning against the fence. The child didn't respond when Harold greeted him. He then whispered, "I want to go to your house. Take me to your house."
No. When how about no?
Why not? I mean, no. How do you make friends?
Not like that.
So when Harold didn't move, the boy looked up, revealing solid black eyes. "Now don't you run away from me," the child screamed. "You're going to walk with me to your house." Harold ran, as anybody should.
Right.
Behind him, he heard the screech that his mother also heard and assumed it was a bobcat. His terrified mother had him blessed by the local clergy, convinced that he had just seen the devil himself.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're heading to England for 1982 and 2014. So the Cannock Chase in England is a place soaked in tragedy and lore. In 2014, paranormal investigator Lee Brickley investigated a chilling sighting. A woman and her daughter were walking when they heard a scream. They saw a young girl who appeared around 10 years old, covering her face. The mother approached and asked, "Are you okay? Were you screaming?" The girl lowered her hands, revealing pitch black eyes. She then vanished. Years earlier, in 1982, Brickley's own aunt claimed to have seen this same girl. Also in Cannock Chase, that child too vanished after revealing solid black eyes.
Like, that's not a coincidence.
No way. Brickley believes this ghostly figure may be connected to a real-life tragedy. The area became infamous in the late 1960s following a series of high-profile crimes known as the Cannock Chase Murders. The bodies of three young girls who had disappeared from locations along the A34 route between Birmingham and the Chase were discovered in the area. In 1968, Raymond Leslie Morris, a motor engineer from Wausau, was convicted at Stafford Aziz for one of the killings and received a life sentence. Some say that the black-eyed children of the Cannock Chase is one of their spirits caught in the cycle of grief, horror, or vengeance.
Well, that's sad.
Yeah. Is this that one? I didn't hear much about that one.
Yeah.
We have some other disturbing accounts in David Weatherly's Black-Eyed Kids Research. He uncovered even earlier stories stretching back centuries. Tales from ancient China of black-eyed girls who haunted villages after a wrongful death, triggering plagues and natural disasters. Sightings from Japanese folklore reflected today in horror films of demonic children with empty black eyes who steal souls or spread misfortune. And even the mysterious Urframan, a statue from Göbekli Tepe, carved over 13,500 years ago, with eyes made from polished obsidian. Many visitors report feeling a chilling presence near the statue, as if they're being watched, which I think is weird.
I was just going to say, I don't feel great looking at it right now myself, and I'm not even looking at it in real life, so.
And we'll post it on Instagram.
I will, however, viewer discretion.
Yeah, I mean, it's not gross, it's just creepy.
No, it's very creepy. It's unsettling. It's giving me a creepy vibe.
Yeah. In each case, from Harold to Alan to the modern-day cabin couple, one thing remains consistent. They want in, whether it's in a car, a home, or maybe your soul itself. Many believe these beings feed on fear. Some theorize that they can read minds, adapting their behavior to either manipulate or intimidate. Some say they're demons. Others believe they're interdimensional parasites or extraterrestrial observers. But perhaps the scariest theory, that they're not after your body at all, but something deeper. As Brian Bethel once said, they are dangerous entities, to be sure, but we have something they don't, something they desperately want, the human soul, and they can't take it unless we let them in. But why do Becks terrify us so deeply? It's the concept of the uncanny valley.
For sure.
Where something looks almost human, but not quite right. Our brains are trained to recognize danger when things pretend to be human. The idea of corrupted innocence, children being evil, has long been used in horror. You have The Omen, Children of the Corn, The Ring, and even in Pet Sematary. There are also a symbolic fear, the fear of opening your door, your home, your life, to something that could easily destroy it. And the moment of hesitation is all they need. So, I mean, I think it's wild. There's other stories, too, that I heard where this guy was, like, he met this girl at, like, a bar or something. I don't remember if she was a bartender or what, but he met her. He ends up going back to her house and, you know, sleeps with her and everything. It's, like, 2 in the morning, and he went downstairs to get, like, a drink of water or something. And there was, like, 25 kids with black eyes in the kitchen.
No.
Yep. And he had, I forget what happened to him, but he had like misfortune and stuff like that afterwards too.
Yeah.
I think his was like one of those things where he had like random, he ended up with like random cancer or something like that. Like, wild.
No.
Because he ended up dying like 6 months later or something like that.
No.
But why don't we talk about some black-eyed children in the pop culture? So the legend of the black-eyed kids didn't remain trapped in shadowy Reddit threads or dusty corners of the paranormal forums. It exploded, becoming part of our digital mythos, fueling an entire genre of indie horror and creeping into books, television, YouTube, and even TikTok. So in indie horror games like The Black Eyed Kids, players are forced to navigate eerie towns and avoid mysterious, emotionless kids whose eyes never blink and whose intentions remain unknown. They've shown up in television shows such as Paranormal Witness and Monsters and Mysteries in America, where dramatizations bringing the account of real-life witnesses to chilling life, blending documentary-style interviews with reenactments that feel uncomfortably close to the truth. But where they truly thrive is in short horror films and online video, a digital age breeding ground for modern folklore. Some of the most notable Beck-inspired works include The Black Eyed Children of 2009, Black Eyed Kids of 2009, The Black Eyed Children by Matt Madsen of 2011, Sunshine Girl and the Hunt for Black Eyed Kids, Anna Miller, 2012.
Sunshine!
I thought I was going to knock it off the computer again. The Artifice, Matthew Holmes, in 2014. And Black Eyed Children, Let Me In, Justin Snyder, 2015.
That one's a little ominous. Let Me In.
These aren't just horror stories. They're community-driven creations, often crowdfunded and shared across platforms by fans who both fear and celebrate the mystery. Films like The Haunting of the Sunshine Girl even helped introduce Becks into the found footage genre, where their ambiguity and childlike appearances translate perfectly into unsettling lo-fi terror. In The Artifice, around the 7th minute, we watch a Beck use a manipulative, vampire-like tactic, posing as an innocent 8-year-old and requesting entry into a stranger's home to watch TV. In the literary world, David Weatherly's book, The Black-Eyed Children, remains one of the definitive collections of first-hand accounts, folklore connections, and psychological theories. He claims that hundreds of people have reached out to him with eerily similar stories from across the world. His work doesn't just collect experiences. It helps legitimize the phenomenon in the public eye, pushing it further into pop culture. The Becks have even infiltrated comics and graphic novels, most notably in the Black Eyed Kids series from Aftershock Comics in 2016, written by Joe Purit and illustrated by Seisman Kurdinsky. The artwork features chilling depictions of Becks operating as part of a large organized force, suggesting not just individual encounters, but a network, a species, a conspiracy. And of course, they become viral horror icons on platforms like TikTok and YouTube. Storytime creators use eerie filters, chilling music, and whispering voices to recount alleged encounters or fictionalized new ones. The memification of Becks has given them a second life, not just as an urban legend, but as a genre staple. Why don't we get a little more philosophical? Are Black Eyed Kids real in the way we understand reality? Or are they egregores, thought forms created by belief and repetition? The more we talk about them, the more real they become. Could we be summoning them just by speaking their names?
Like, why would you say such a thing?
I mean, I've heard a lot. I've heard other, like, stories, too, where people are like, we talked about them and, like, brought them up and then had the experience.
Okay, great. Like, I don't need this in my life.
I mean, if somebody comes knocking at my mom's back door tonight...
Oh, dear.
Just don't answer.
Right.
But apparently, too, people feel compelled. Like, not compelled, but people feel like a couple of stories. Like, one girl had it where she was, like, it was after Halloween, and her husband went to take a shower, and they knocked at the door, and she opened the door, and then she was talking to them, and they wanted something. And obviously not candy, like, no trick-or-treat or nothing.
Right.
They want to use her phone or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she found herself slowly opening the door more and more.
Yeah.
Like, not even realizing it.
Just compelled.
Yeah. There's another story, too, where a guy's wife, it was the morning, and the guy and his girlfriend or wife, anyway, she gets into the shower, she goes into the bathroom, and a knock at the door, he opens it, and it's a kid, teenager-ish, and he's wearing sunglasses and eating an apple. And he's like, you need to leave, blah, 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 I'm not, whatever it is. And he's like, you need to leave or I'm going to call the cops. And apparently the Beck turns around and it's like, I'm sorry, before that, he asks if he, the kid, the Beck asks if he could get ketchup for his apple.
Goodbye.
Like, that's one of those things. Like, yeah. It was like, that was the thing where he was like, something's kind of off here.
Right.
Something's a little weird.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I'm not giving you ketchup for your apple. You need to leave
right
before I call the police. And apparently he looked at him and was like, you're not going to be calling anybody. And, like, turned to leave. And he, like, told his girlfriend or wife to, like, call the police or whatever. And they, like, ran upstairs in the bedroom. And here, like, when they went to look and stuff, and it was something, like, with their fence. It was, like, super tall or whatever. Mm-hmm. And in order for the kid to, like, he couldn't just disappear as fast as he could have the way he did. Which is just wild. So that kind of leads us to here, to where the Becks, they're not just stories, they're warnings. A warning that says, not everything that knocks deserves to be let in. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a comment, guys. It only makes, it helps us reach more, helps us kind of also be better. I have to thank Sam for writing this episode. She does a great job for us. And she has her own podcast, Scare Me Sam. And she has her own blog, ScareMeSam.com. So if you're interested in any of her work, go and check her out. I think that pretty much wraps this up.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, I guess if you wanted to email us or whatever, the email is...
OminousArchives@gmail.com.
And all of our socials are also the Ominous Archives. So I think with all that being said, and don't forget to come back next week as we dive into more strange and haunted stories down here in the Ominous Archives. See ya.